Good evening.
I do have to kid the engineer. Good evening, anybody. Here's Morgan. See, I work from my house, so if I kid around, you don't know whether the equipment's bad or whatever. It ought to be. That's a thing. Say, the paper's back, right? So this morning they delivered the World Telegram. Oh, what did they deliver? The Herald Tribune is what they'd bring. Yeah, the Tribune. And they had a fascinating editorial about the strike. It said, and I quote inaccurately, because they threw the paper away. It's astounding. I don't know what your reaction was, but mine was, well, look at this piece of junk. They had only 18 days to think up an editorial, and they wrote how terrible it was to have no newspaper on account of you couldn't keep track of the births and deaths. That was their point of view. And this evening, they bring the Journal American. The headline says, stocks highest in history. A piece of news I couldn't possibly have lived without. This is the paper for which I have been waiting. Here's the front page. Approximately one-third of the page one of the paper I couldn't live without is about the fact that presses are rolling again. With a picture of what is in newspaper dumb called a pretty girl reading the Journal American. That's the picture on page one. That's the news I have to wait for. The paper is back. And what's the news in the paper? That the paper is back. I thought that it would be a blessing just not to have to listen on television to the stories about the strike. The whole point in having a strike over is that they would shut up now. But no, now the paper wants to carry on about it. It's like when you get a haircut and you look in the mirror in the barber shop and you see yourself and yourself and yourself and yourself endlessly. Or like the little girl in the box of salt who used to carry a box of salt on which was a picture of a little girl carrying a box of salt on which was a picture of a little girl carrying a box of salt. It's endless. We have here a newsprint tiger by the tail. At least they won't let you let go. What is the other big news? In Port Jervis, New Jersey, Port Jervis, New York, a citizen sent the mayor a dollar, which he thinks covers all the time she didn't put the dime in the meter. Page one. Then there's an editorial on page one. It's great to be back, it says. It's great to be back. Well, I have news for you, honey. I didn't miss you. Reading a paper is something like brushing your teeth. Your mother trained you early. And 9 cases out of 10, you could stop brushing your teeth and they'd fall out anyway. Well, what's the difference? In answer to, I think it's 2,000 requests, a little under perhaps, I'm going to read The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe, from which I have eliminated 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 verses. Yes, I took 5 out. You'll be astonished to know it does not change the meaning any. It's the same. It just happens that I read this so well that I couldn't stand the thought of your staying there any longer without having me do it. A little under 2,000. Well, the request will probably come in after I'm finished, not to do it again. But I'm going to do it. This is a poetic-type poem, the style of which Mr. Poe borrowed from a poet who preceded him. It was a man named Albert Pike, who wrote a poem called, interestingly enough, Isidore, which originally appeared in the New York Mirror in 1843. And the style and the beat, the meter, which is the crux of Poe's Raven was anticipated by this Mr. Pike. We do not know who he stole it from. As a matter of fact, I think I can read to it one stanza from Isidore by Albert Pike. Thou art lost to me forever. I have lost thee, Isidore. Thy head will never rest on my loyal bosom more. Thy tender eyes will never more gaze, fondly into mine, nor thy arm around me lovingly and trustingly entwined. Thou art lost to me forever, Isidore. It was mighty poor, but it gave Mr. Poe an idea. Poe wasn't too well either, you know. He was a sickly fellow. I think he's on the needle quite a part of the time. Well, Coleridge wasn't too well either. Who is? Let's think about it for a while and then dismiss it. None of us is too well. There's well. I've known people to be well, but not too well. I myself am far from being a bargain. Harvard has sent for my head. Once, upon a midnight, dreary, while I pondered, weak and weary, over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping as of someone gently rapping at my chamber door. "'Tis some visitor," I muttered, "tapping at my chamber door, only this and nothing more." Distinctly, I remember, it was in the bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I wished the morrow. Vainly I had sought to borrow from my books surcease of sorrow. Sorrow for the lost Lenore, for the rare and radiant maiden whom the angels name Lenore. Nameless here forevermore. And the silken, sad, uncertain rustling of each purple curtain thrilled me. Filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before. So that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, "'Tis some visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door, some late visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door. This it is, and nothing more." Presently, my soul grew stronger. "Hesitating then, no longer, sir," said I, "or madam, truly your forgiveness I implore, but the fact is I was napping, and so gently you came rapping, and so faintly you came tapping at my chamber door, that I scarce was sure I heard you. Here, I opened wide the door. Darkness there, and nothing more. Open here, I flung the shutter. When, with many a flirt and flutter, in there stepped a stately raven of the saintly days of yore. Not the least obeisance made he. Not a minute stopped or stayed he, but with mien of lord or lady, perched above my chamber door, perched upon a bust of Pallas, just above my chamber door, perched and sat, and nothing more. Then this ebon bird, beguiling my sad fancy into smiling by the grave and stern decorum of the countenance it wore, though thy crest be shorn and shaven, thou, I said, art no craven. Ghastly, grim and ancient raven, wandering from the nightly shore, tell me what thy lordly name is on the night's Plutonian shore. Quoth the raven, "Nevermore." Be that word a sign of parting, bird or fiend? I shrieked, upstarting, "Get thee back into the tempest of the night's Plutonian shore. Leave no black plume as a token of that lie thy soul hath spoken.
Leave my loneliness unbroken. Quit the bust above my door. Take thy beak from out my heart and take thy form from off my door. Quoth the raven, nevermore. And the raven, never flitting, still is sitting on the pallid bust of Pallas just above my chamber door. And his eyes have all the seeming of a demon's that is dreaming. And the lamplight o'er him streaming throws his shadow on the floor. And my soul, from out that shadow that lies floating on the floor, shall be lifted nevermore.
Pretty good. I may record that someday and play it to myself. Say, it did kill a lot of time. You see what happened? I was out today counting traffic. And I want to tell you, this city is packed to the brim with imbeciles who drive their own cars into the middle of the town to see can they get out. Eventually, they get out and count the cost as nothing. They have nothing to do with their lives except to sit there and stare at somebody else's bumper. Of course, occasionally they give evidence of being minutely alive. They blow their horns. Egad, if I could but rise above the crowd and make loud, vulgar speeches to them. Starting with the premise, you don't need a car, you ass. All you do with it is drive into town and drive out of it. Why don't you take a bus? Let Steve Allen do the driving. Wait a minute, how's that ad go? That's right, leave the driving to him. Take a choo-choo. Walk. Don't go cluttering up my city with your noxious internal combustion engines. Sound pretty good, huh? So my advice to you, friends, is watch yourself at all times, because I am liable at almost any time to read the raven again. I like it. I like to hear what I do with it. And I think with constant practice, I can become completely overbearing. All I want from you is your time and attention. And incidentally, no one has yet told me whether it is correct to say, because why? Which I have again. Oh, I found another mistake in the same book. This is Bernstein's book, Watch Your Language. He said, quote and unquote, and you can't unquote anything. You can only end the quote. In each of us is a little streak of rottenness. Have you ever noticed? You like to pick on your betters. At least I do. Naturally, I first have to go through this terrible catharsis of admitting that I have betters. Once that is established, I no longer need the doctor. Having once established it, then I can pull my betters down. I'm like a born socialist. A socialist never wants to improve anybody's lot, really. He just wants to bring other people down to his level. This is the basic tenet of the entire communist form of government. You notice? You think I'm kidding, don't you? Listen, kiddo, I say more things between lighting a cigarette and burning my fingers than you can shake a cat at. They don't happen, a lot of them, to make sense, but I say them just the same. For example, at this moment, I am not really saying anything. I am merely talking because the engineer thinks it's 8:15. That's his beeswax, right? He started me tonight at 8:02 and a half, I believe it was. After playing some imbecile music that was supposedly going to make you go out and buy a stereopticon set.
Driving tonight? SS Cowboy Royal. Driving tonight?
This station has only one commercial.
Driving tonight? Buy Prism Motor Oil.
I've never caught the name of it yet. Well, I don't hold him. I am still, strangely enough, up to this day, allowed to be here twice a week. Monday and Friday, 8:00. And believe me, it is my pleasure. Morgan will be on the same corner in front of the cigar store again by the grace of man. This is Monday, isn't it?
Friday, then. Or Monday, whatever comes up next. Good night.